Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with four Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. Hey, it's the 4th of July, Independence Day, the official birth of our nation. It's a time when many of us enjoy a day off from work and get together with friends and family for picnics and barbecues. After sunset, many of us will stand with other Americans to watch fireworks. I'm sure the person next to you, oohing and aahing at the colorful streams of light shooting through the night sky, shares your love of country. But that woman waving sparklers, or that dad wrangling his kids, may not share your politics or worldview. They might have enthusiastically voted for Trump, or still may be nursing the wound of Hillary's loss. Maybe they feel that we're on a path to making America great again, and this fall plan to vote for representatives who'll keep the nation on its present course. Or maybe they saw the results in 2016 as a colossal mistake and plan to head to the polls in November to upend President Trump's current momentum. It's hard to know all of that for sure as you stare at bursts of color punctuated by thunderous booms. So, yeah, watching fireworks on July 4th may be as close as some of us get to expressing a shared love of country with fellow citizens. With the Us and Them podcast, we know, as I'm sure you do, that there is a great deal of polarization in our nation. And to work through many of our differences, we've got to do a lot more than stand next to each other on patriotic holidays. Back in 2016, I produced a piece for the New Yorker Radio Hour, which featured a guy who I believe really tries to see both sides of our nation's partisan divide. In the spirit of Independence Day, and with the hope of encouraging the bridging of some of our nation's differences, we are re-releasing this piece, which features a friendship between Professor Hua Xu and one of his more unconventional students.
In fall of 2013, Dave Carroll was one of three veterans who enrolled in my freshman writing class as part of the Posse Veterans Program at Vassar College.
Vassar, located in Poughkeepsie, New York, may be considered your typical liberal Northeastern college. I could keep describing it, but I think the best way to understand this friendship is to hear from Dave and Hua.
Typical Vassar student, that's it's almost an oxymoron because the campus prides itself in being really diverse, really welcoming, really open-minded, pretty liberal slash progressive campus vibe, a lot of interest in social justice, sort of an artsy school. It's very, very gay friendly.
My name's David Carroll. I'm 35 years old, and I'm a senior at Vassar College now. Before coming to Vassar College, I was in the Army for 11 and a half years and spent 4 years deployed to Iraq as a 19-kilo tank commander. You know, I am a Republican, and I'm a Texas Republican.
We have six more presentations on Tuesday. I'll bring some, carbohydrates.
But what did you know about Vassar?
I knew nothing about Vassar. Nothing. A buddy of mine said, hey, man, he called me one day. He's like, hey, you know, Vassar College is looking for veterans. You should apply. I said, is it a good school? He said, yeah. I said, done. Let's apply. And then I said, well, where the hell is Vassar at? And I was like, I've never heard of that. So I Googled it and looked at the library and I was like, looks good. Let's try that. Let's go to a woman's college full of Democrats. Awesome. Let's do that.
Actually, Vassar went co-ed back in 1969, but this reputation lingers on.
I've always wondered this. So, like I've told you in the past, I didn't really know that we had this program before showing up that first day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you get pictures of all your students. And I remember printing out the pictures for your class, and I'm walking to school, and I look down and I see a guy who's like my age, his head shaved. But I remember you were also wearing a t-shirt with like the GOP elephant on it.
Yeah.
Did you do that on purpose?
Oh yeah, you gotta represent.
All the other pictures were like kids in their senior prom tuxedos and dresses. And then I see this, like a man, you know, like someone, I couldn't tell whether your head was shaved or whether you're bald. And I'm like, this guy is not wearing this shirt ironically.
No, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't ironic. You know, if I'm the guy with the Republican shirt on whenever the teachers print out their little things, you know, at least then they know that they're going to have to address that issue at some point, you know, and it forces them to be honest a little bit more so.
It totally worked for me. I mean,
from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX, this is Us and Them, the podcast where we tell stories about America's cultural divides. I'm Trey Kay. So, like oil and water, we have the makings here of an us and them culture clash before the backdrop of a liberal college campus in New York's Hudson Valley. But Dave Carroll, the elephant in the room, or the classroom, surprised Professor Hua Xu, and Xu responded in kind.
What was your impression of Vassar kids when you started?
I was impressed. I was impressed. It took a good, you know, almost a whole first year just to be able to articulate my thoughts the way that they did. Just speaking that language is hard, you know. So in the military, the more I cuss, the faster I get promoted. So that was, you know, that's just how you talked, you know. So it was just a different language. So you had to, you know, you had to learn a different language when you came here just so that you could be able to get your point across. So my first impression of these students were, holy shit, these kids are smart. You know, there's a lot to be learned from them.
I remember having to remind Dave and the other veterans that they were smart too, just in a different way, maybe a little rough around the edges. But I wondered if he was ever bothered with being around so many young college students.
You know, so it wasn't so much dealing with 18 and 19-year-olds at college here, because I dealt with 18 and 19-year-olds all the time. There was a little bit difference where I couldn't just scream at them and make them do push-ups. You know, I wish I could have done that a few times. But there's times where I walk through and I just hear a really ignorant conversation of, you know, just not ignorant, just, you know, no experience, no life experience conversation going on somewhere. And, you know, and I just think, yeah, you know, what it's like to be 19 again and try to figure it out.
I was doing an independent study with Dave, and, you know, we just sort of, there was no actual final assignment. So I just said, look, you've mentioned in the past wanting to write about your experiences. Just write me, you know, 5 or 6 pages and that'll be it.
I have files and files of just stuff because I don't sleep well sometimes. You know, so whenever I'm thinking about it, I just go try to write it just to get it down and out.
He sent me a document. It was one of the most disturbing things I've ever read.
You know, I mean, I revisit it a lot just in my own mind. It plays all the time in my own mind.
And part of it was because I think he was aware of how disturbing it was.
You know, I have tons and tons of just gibberish written, but so far they've just been going into a file on my computer that says veteran shit.
This was just an account of combat, of life as a soldier, of destruction that was unlike anything I'd ever read or seen.
You know, you have highlights that you look back on your life. Some of my highlights are just happen to be really horrible things happening.
And when he turned the paper in, he included this note. Don't worry, man, I'm not a monster anymore. Ha ha. I've come to grips with my past. It's hard to tell my story to civilians because the first thing most of them think is,
he likes killing. I wonder if he still wants to. War is a different place. Those actions are acceptable there. I have boxes full of medals from acting like that. They're all in my attic to be seen again whenever I move. I am not proud of a lot of things I did while I was deployed, but I am damn sure not ashamed of any of them. Most of the people I know now in my life know I was in the Army, but few of them know what you know now. If this paper has to be seen by anyone other than you, let me know so I can write you something else. This is for your eyes only. See you next semester.
Typically, when I meet with students, I can kind of rely on being older than them to have a tiny bit more wisdom than them. With these guys, there was no age difference, and their life experiences were really different from mine. I didn't feel like I had that much to offer, other than just as someone who's willing to listen to them and take them seriously.
What was the experience actually like?
Of being in a tank?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it's miserable, but it's pretty miserable. So whenever you're, you know, in August in Iraq, it's 110 outside, it's 125 in the tank, you know, so it gets to be miserable. And there's a lot of times where you did 24-hour ops, so you went out there and sat for 24 hours in one spot and just kind of scanned. And after a while, it'd feel like your brain is literally melting because it was just so unbearable.
So over 11 years, you were in Iraq for like 4.5 years?
Yeah, four.
4 years. How many firefights were you involved in?
A lot. I would say that I pulled the triggers, you know, around about 300 times. I think the best I can gauge IEDs that went off on my vehicle or near my vehicle is 32.
Like, what do you do to kind of keep it together? Are you just sort of anticipating the next rush?
Yeah, you're just anticipating the next rush because it can happen at any second. You kind of just sit in there and just talk and listen to the radio. So you could wire up a radio that would come through the headset in the tank. So you just play music.
What were you listening to?
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit
the floor. It was on somebody's iPod, but Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, man. You listen to that and just wait for the kickoff. And you just be in the tunnel waiting for him to call your name.
Like, you would just listen to that one song over and over?
I mean, that was the theme of it. Say back then you had 180 songs on a thing. You know, out of 180 songs on the iPod, that Let the Bodies Hit the Floor had to play at least 5 times. You know, so if you had to put a theme song to the war in Iraq, it would be that. Everybody had their own taste, but in my tank it was nasty heavy metal.
Do you still listen to those songs now?
No, I can't listen to them anymore.
You know, up until this point, I felt like I had a pretty good understanding of him, and what really shocked me about what he sent me was just how it seemed as though he actually would have wanted to go back.
So I missed the adrenaline of it. You know, it's the fear, the excitement, the pain. If you get to engage with the enemy at close range, it's like the best challenge that you can have in your life. And then on the other side of that is when it doesn't go right and it's really bad. So then you can go into the rest of your life knowing that it'll never, ever be as worse as war. But there's also a little bit of it that you're never going to feel again, that you're going to miss.
I think what troubled me was the honesty, was his recognition that this was a part of who he was. I just felt really humbled, and I also just felt in awe that this guy had done all of these things, and now I was somehow responsible for him.
Even I remember going to your office the first semester and just looking around in your office and be like, oh yeah, this is the exact same, you know, you got the West Coast vibe on it, but you know, this is the exact same stuff that I have.
Now, Hua's office is chock full of books, vinyl record albums, baseball cards, posters, and various memorabilia that reflect his nostalgia for growing up in the 1990s. There's a lot of hip hop in the mix.
You know, I was like, this is awesome because it's just random 90s things thrown in there. You know, just like you had a Master P doll. You know, I was like, yeah.
Dave's talking about a little doll that's made in the image of 90s hip hop artist Master P. This thing is still packed in its original box. If you pull in the string, this little Master P would sing his double platinum hit, Make Him Say, Make Him Say,
One thing that I think is really important to note is that these guys weren't the type to sit around and swap war stories. In fact, Dave told us that before coming to Vassar, he'd been part of a veterans group at his previous school, and he had put up a sign on the first day that said, only one war story per day. He just wasn't really the type who wanted to live in the past.
So as I sat and recorded Hua interviewing Dave, I had the impulse to ask Dave if he'd mind letting me read the essay that he'd shared with Hua. And he gave me a flat-out no. And I asked why. And he said that I hadn't earned the right yet. This exchange got Hua to thinking.
You just said that, like, someone you don't know needs to, like, earn the right to access your stories. Why did you think I deserve to read? I mean, I know I assigned you something,
you have,
but like
a Master P doll in your room, dude. You know, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot. You know, it just has to be somebody that you can connect with, that you know it's not just going to be that's open-minded enough to see those things and say, well, that's really not who he is. That's just some of the things that has, you know, he's been involved in.
I think that's all because of the Master P doll.
all rings around the Master P doll.
It's crazy that I barely remember that I have that doll in my I mean, it's because I have so much shit in my office, but I mean, did you think though, when we started like our class, that I would end up earning that right?
No, because I think you were the first professor that I had. I think you were the very, very first class that I'd taken at Vassar. You know, so, and then here comes, you know, the stereotypical Northeast professor, you know, and I was like, oh, look at this guy, you know, and you didn't know what to expect for a while. And then after, you know, the third or fourth class, I think that's when I was like, hey, man, this guy gets it. You know, he understands what's, you know, all of this kind of looks like a little bit.
That first month, all three of you guys had a lot of challenges and you would come talk to me and I would feel really bad. But then after a while, I was like, I can't just, feeling bad doesn't really do anything. I can't just like have pity for these guys.
Yeah. And none of us want that. You know, I don't know any veterans at all that are at top tier institutions that are looking for even a drop of pity. Nobody wants that at all. We just don't know what we're doing.
Like, how do you think being here has changed your sense of like politics or just sort of how you see the world? Or
so I've always had a moderate conservative viewpoint, always. Yeah. And you know, I just think that as far as what's really changed me from being here is knowing that the left and the right aren't that far off. We're, you know, there's the far left that's far left, and then there's the far right. But almost every single person that's here could be just categorized in the middle, because there's no one that I've spoke to that's far left or far right. You know, so even the ones that I would assume was far left by Texas standards, once you get talking to them and speaking with them, there's compromise there. You know, I don't think it matters if you got an elephant or the donkey on your shirt. I don't think it really matters. So I think that what I've learned is that I don't think it matters.
So at the end of this month, Dave and his fellow liberal Northeastern 20-somethings will be walking as part of Vassar's 2016 graduating class. He himself doesn't seem particularly interested in this ritual, but his mom and grandma are coming all the way to Poughkeepsie, and they're so proud they really want to see him cross that stage. We've talked about what he might do in the future. He's mentioned the possibility of getting an MBA, maybe law school. You know, I've thought maybe he should write a book.
So as far as I've gotten now is I bought a house near Fort Worth so that I have the possibility to go to A&M Law. So I thought, try to go to law school and see where that leads me.
So Dave's got a lot of options, but in a way I don't think he's that different from a lot of the 20-somethings he'll be walking with. They've acquired a lot of knowledge, they've learned a lot about themselves, but at this point, they don't really know what they want to do next.
It's just that I want to go spend some time in my pool and float underneath the shade for a few years and figure out what I want to do with life. So I really don't know yet.
Spino Kaplan. David Allen Carroll Jr. Henry Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in the spring of 2016 when Vassar professor Hua Xiu and I spoke with Dave Carroll. Coming up, I speak with Dave after he's returned to Texas from the din of liberalism in the Northeast.
Whenever you watch a certain news channel and it sickens you and you can't watch but 5 minutes of it, that's not the liberals' point of view. The opposite is whenever people from the Northeast or liberals or Democrats watch Fox News, that doesn't represent all of us.
I'm Trey Kay, and this is Us and Them, which is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
So after graduating in May 2016, Dave Carroll moved back to Texas. We decided to check in with him and to see if he had any residual effects from his time at Vassar College. Now he's living in Granbury, Texas, which is about 25 miles southwest of Fort Worth. I asked Dave if, after 3 years in the liberal Northeast, did Texas look any different to him?
It does. It seems and feels night and day. When I was down here in Fort Hood, it felt to me like the Republican Party was really getting after it and going and doing great and wonderful things. And, you know, it felt like there was diversity within the ranks a little bit so. And then when I get to Granbury, it's just that it's outside of the city limits a little bit more so. You know, there's less diversity. And now I kind of feel like it's almost my responsibility to at least give a left's opinion on things since I went through for 3 years. So while I'm down here in Texas and while I am still a registered Republican, whenever I talk to people, I still try to say, yes, but there's also another opinion to all of these things. And let's not just spew what the media is telling us and take that as facts.
Just to be clear, I mean, what type of media do you find the people in your community listening to, reading?
Yeah, so it's all Fox News. If you watch Fox News for a half an hour in the morning and then go on with your day, you'll eventually run into somebody that said those bits of pieces.
What do you think the result of that is?
You know, I think that breeds this notion of the whole world thinks like this. It becomes to where they can't accept another opinion or another idea. It's the exact same up in the Northeast. I mean, everybody watching MSNBC and CNN, and no one had a different perspective. So I think that the problem lies in just getting all your information from one source and not moving around and not fact-checking any of it.
And again, you still consider yourself a Republican and a conservative, right?
I do. But I think that I've learned in my time in the Northeast, I think that I learned that most people are center. It's only that we're left and right because there's no other opinion, no other option. I'm a Republican, but I'm pro-choice just because I'm not a woman and it's not my place to make that opinion. I'm pro-gun registration because I've handled guns in my life and I know that it takes some responsibility to handle them. And I'm pro-EPA and I'm pro-environment just because there's no sense of destroying the only one that we have. So as a Republican, yeah, I pretty much stand against everything that the Republican Party stands for.
Well, part of what the Republican Party stands for. I mean, what are the parts of the Republican Party that you do stand for?
So I continue to stand for the smaller government. And, you know, the people should stand on their own. And that while, yes, there needs to be some sort of social services and programs in place for people of need, those programs can be cut somewhat just to encourage individual responsibility.
You said at the end of the piece that the right and the left are not that far apart. Do you still feel that way now that you're in Texas?
I do. Even if you voted for Trump or Hillary, all of your ideas and all of your passions weren't rolled up in that vote. So you agreed with some things and you disagreed with other things. And I think that it's the same on both sides. But there's not another choice. So you have to pick one of the sides.
Speaking of the election, and you know, you're somebody who did many, many years in the military. Something that I've heard after the election from my conservative friends is now we have a president who the troops can respect. You're laughing. Why are you laughing? Yeah,
I mean, from my point of view, my small perspective on the military, I was only a staff sergeant when I got out, but I've had lieutenants that sat back and thought about what the mission was and the best way to do it. And then I've had lieutenants that have immediately heard the mission and jumped to it and said, we're going to go attack. And in my experience, it was always those lieutenants that were gung-ho and ready to go after every little target that were the most dangerous. Just because the military shouldn't be used as the first option. We have a State Department and a massive bureaucracy that's designed to be the first level of international relations instead of the military. And to me, as a veteran, I don't want to go to war. It's a very immature person that believes that war will solve any problems.
It seemed clear that Dave's time in the Northeast had altered his perspective on Texas society and culture. But I wondered if there might be aspects of the Northeast that he misses.
There is. There's two things. And one, the biggest one off the top of my head is New York had you can't talk on your cell phone laws. Texas doesn't. This is the most frustrating thing I've ever seen, everybody on their phone driving. But next is open carry laws in Texas. As a soldier, I was in Iraq 4 separate times. So I spent 48 months of my life in war in a country that I couldn't understand a word that the people said. I knew very, very little Arabic. But what I did learn to read is people's face and their eyes and their movements. So I could walk down the street and see if a guy was a threat or if they were just moving along with their day. And here in Granbury, there's a really neat town square down here. And, you know, all around the courthouse is little shops and things like that. So I'm walking through there one time and I see like 2 or 3 people with handguns on their side. And I think that's strange. I haven't seen that in a long time. And my initial thought was, that's good. I like to see that. Well, then later on, I seen the same people walking towards me and I could see in their face and in their eyes that they were absolutely petrified of everything around them. That's very, very concerning to me, is people that aren't qualified and don't understand the responsibility of carrying a gun. And that's something that when I was down here before, I thought that it should be, you know, almost a law that everyone has a gun on them at all times.
But are you saying that there's kind of like this heightened vigilance or
exactly
maybe heightened paranoia?
Yeah, and it was more heightened, I would say heightened paranoia. They're just looking around and, you know, it's almost like the people that do it are waiting to be the hero. And I've been in situations where I've witnessed the hero, and that's not a great thing to be. You ever heard that little saying that everybody wants to be a gangster until there's gangster shit to do? You know, and that's, you know, I just feel like the more people that are untrained with guns, it just creates an unsafe environment for everybody else.
So that's a situation where you are observing your fellow Texans in the town that you live in. But I hear a lot of criticism from people on the right that our university systems are really breeding grounds for liberal thought. What do you think of that? I mean, in a way, you kind of felt that way before you went there when you put your Republican T-shirt on, that you kind of felt like that's what you were getting into, right?
It is. I mean, at least whenever you go to school like that. So, you know, just for example, I was taking an American political theory class one time, and we was going over Jefferson and the Federalist Papers. And then one day was just we had to read articles that was such as like the shrinking Republican Party, why the Republican Party is in default and things like that. And so that was on a Tuesday. And I thought, okay, cool. Thursday will be, let's see why the Democrats are, where their weaknesses are or whatever. And then no, Thursday came and it's back to Federalist 10. So, I mean, at least at the school that I went to, it was a breeding ground for liberal thoughts. But in a way, too, students don't take every bit of those ideas and move forward with them as their own. So if the universities in the United States now are preaching liberal ideas and kids come out of school and have an idea of let's help the less fortunate than us and protect the environment, you know, I'm all for it. I mean, it's not bad things that they're teaching.
Well, and also, I mean, I think that that there seems to be an idea that at a time in the world when we are having challenges with terrorism, that people who would be on the left would, I guess, coddle terrorists? Is that something that you...
Yeah. I think that a lot of Republicans, especially in the South, think of liberals and Democrats as just weak and not wanting to take the necessary steps to protect our nation and to protect our economy, and that they would coddle the institutions and the policies that would allow for, you know, the demise of America. So it's very, very hard, because whenever you talk to somebody just about their life and their family and what they're doing, we all have the same goals. We just want to be happy. We just want to go raise our kids in a safe environment and do our thing. And both sides recognize the need for some social program. It's just a matter of how to implement those policies and how to get both sides to talk to each other. And I just feel like if there wasn't such hyperpartisanism, there would be a conversation that's meaningful going on in the United States. It's become one of those ideas that people can't wrap their minds around. And it's kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around that I left as a Republican and went up to New York and somehow the liberals rubbed off on me. To me, that is at times annoying, because now I feel like I have this burden of the ideas that continue to separate the United States. And I feel like I'm in the middle of it.
Would you suggest that other people take a similar step to maybe embed themselves in the experience of the other part of America?
I think that, you know, that would be the ultimate goal, is to actually try to go and move somewhere and actually embed yourself with another culture almost. But I think for right now, I would just like to see people change the channel. Whenever you watch a certain news channel and it sickens you and you can't watch but 5 minutes of it, that's not the liberals' point of view. The opposite is whenever people from the Northeast or liberals or Democrats watch Fox News, that doesn't represent all of us. That doesn't represent the Republicans. And it's those networks that are continuing to divide our country and make conversations and compromises difficult.
Really enjoyed getting to know Dave Carroll, and I like to check in with him every few months or so. These days, especially these days in the Trump era, conversations across the culture war divide seem to have a heightened us versus them feel to it. There seems to be little interest in concession or finding common ground. We seem to be more interested in barbs, jabs, insults, and a whole lot of whataboutism. But that's not where Dave is coming from. He's from a different place on the political spectrum than me, but our conversations are more about listening than airing political grievances or winning partisan battles. I believe he's invested more time in finding common ground than many on the right or the left are willing to do. And I respect that. Recently, Dave completed a master's in legal studies and has begun working on a PhD in organizational leadership. He says he wants to start a nonprofit organization that helps veterans transition from military to civilian life. And lately, he started his own radio talk show.
Again, give us a call, 817-736-0360 at any time during this program. We'll be talking about politics all day long. We'll be talking a little bit about the international views of us as Americans and as United States policymakers.
He says it's a lot of fun, and he feels like he's filling a need. And that's to encourage his Texas brethren to widen their perspective past the Fox News channel.
If we can filter out some of the propaganda that's filtered through the left and the right media stations and know what the truth is a little bit more so, I think that we'd all be even better informed, because if we're watching one network all the time, you will definitely be skewed in your opinion. So I would encourage everybody to look, right? Look, read, try to figure out as much as you possibly can. I always go to BBC News, right? So BBC News is...
I'd like to hear more from conservatives interested in bridging the political divide. If you are someone like Dave or know someone like him, write to me, Trey@usandthempodcast.com. You've been listening to Us and Them, The original segment was produced for the New Yorker Radio Hour by me, Trey Kay, and edited by David Krasnow and Avi Carrillo. Additional editing and production by Laurie Stern, Mitch Hanley, and Loretta Williams. Special thanks to writer and teacher Hua Xiu for introducing me to his student, Dave Carroll. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. Our intern is Nicholas Tantillo. The marvelous people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Endowment for the Humanities, West Virginia Humanities Council, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.